Hi, it's Kathy Forster reporting from the Far West Music Conference in Oakland, California. We're chatting with a music legend right now. And I'm so happy you took the time to sit down and talk to us. Freebo, tell us a little bit about Far West and why you came here this year.
Well, like so many things in life, John Lennon's expression, life's what happens when you're busy making other plans. And my plans were never to be a folk musician. But I'll try and make the long story short. I mean, I was raised to be a doctor and to go to college. And my mother made me take piano lessons as a kid. And she always said, when I say I want to go out and play, and said, well, practice, you can play after you practice, but someday you'll thank me. And of course I do. And so one thing led to another, and I had piano lessons, and I played tuba in a high school band when I wasn't playing football. And I picked up guitar between junior and senior high school from a counselor, and I was a waiter at a camp, and met a guy in a school in Germany who was my roommate, a guy named Jerry Donahue, and sat down with him, and he said, I just played bass stuff. He said, where'd you learn to do that? I said, I just do it. He said, let's start a band. And we did. It was my first band. And then I came back to Philadelphia, went to school, and met some other kids, said, we're starting a band. We need a bass player. I said, I can do that. And that band became a pretty well-known Philadelphia band. We got a record deal with Atlantic. And in the process, I met an 18-year-old Bonnie Raitt, who liked the band and liked the way I played bass. And so when the band broke up, in 71, she asked me if I would come and make her first record with her and do some gigs, and I did, and that lasted for over 10 years, and probably like eight records, I guess, and I met a lot of people on the way, and got to play with a lot of folks, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Ringo Starr, and Maria Muldaur, and Midnight at the Oasis, a bunch of stuff, and I was a bass player for many years, and that's the way I defined myself. I didn't write songs. I had no desire to write songs. I felt I was expressing myself on bass, but there was this, I call it my personal GPS. It was it's the intuitive part of all of us that kind of goes from the head to the body and feels what's going on. And I was frustrated, and I didn't know who or what I was frustrated at. And it wasn't that I wasn't getting enough FaceTime or stage time. I had plenty of that, and people knew who I was. But it turns out it was my musical child was screaming to come out, and I was only letting him out a very small amount. So I made a conscious decision to start writing songs, because I realized that a song was a vessel that I could put all these ideas into and produce them. And that decision was like 15, 20 years ago, and that's led me on this journey of finding my voice, figuratively and literally, and getting to the point of, I wanted to get to the point where, and I did a lot of work on not comparing myself with other people, because when you work with people like Bonnie or James Taylor, or Jackson Browne, it's hard not to compare yourself. So I worked on that, and I realized that, well, I'll never be a Jackson Browne or James Taylor, but then again, I'm Freebo, and they'll never be me. So my only job is my job is to be the best me I can be, and I want to get to the point where I can write a song that I think is a good song, and get to the point where I can enjoy playing it and singing it. And now with my fifth CD, I've gotten to that point. I love what I do. I'm happier than ever. My personal GPS is telling me that I'm at ease.
You're on the right path.
I am on the right path. And, you know, Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss. And, well, in order to follow your bliss, you have to find it first. And I certainly found it with music by accident. But, again, that was only a small part. So now when I go back and play bass, I probably do it better than ever, because I'm detached from the result. And I have my creative expression in my singer-songwriter thing with guitar and vocal, and I've got a great bass player plays with me. He's fantastic. So that's the relatively short answer for a really short question for a long story, and that's kind of how I got the far. I first came in 2002 to Jacksonville. Florida was my first folk alliance. Caroline Aiken suggested that I come, and she turned me on a couple showcases I played with her, and She brought me to Kerrville. So 2002 is when I really came into this world. And first CD came out in 99, and it was a big production, everything I ever wanted to do. And but once I come into the folk world, I realized more and more it's about the singer and the song. And so that's been a very interesting journey for the last 12, 13 years. And coming to Folk Alliance, to the one in Kansas City, and the national, and I go to NERFA generally, been a couple of SWRFAs. And it's just a wonderful, I mean, it's a conference, but it's a community.
Yeah. It's what do you think people get out of coming to these conferences? What do you think is the best thing?
I think you get a lot out of it. First of all, I mean, like I said, it's community, so you become tight with like-minded people, with kindred spirits. One of the things that I've gotten out of coming to these things is finding out what I do that works and finding out what I do that doesn't work, and listening to other people and seeing what they do that works and it doesn't work, and constantly tweaking what I do. And there's a certain humility in playing in a hotel room for two, three, four people. And not focusing on the people who aren't there, but focusing on the people who are. And it makes it all that much easier to go to play in front of 1,000 people.
Yeah.
That's easy. Playing in front of 2 or 3 people is not easy. It's done a lot for me in that respect. It's a great community, and it's about folk music, but it's really about acoustic music, and it's about the song and the singer and the songwriter. And so there's a lot of empathy and compassion here, because we've all been through it. And then people like Russ and Julie Paris, who do house concerts, and all the people who do house concerts completely altruistically, and help us make a living by helping to support us. And then the panel that you're on this morning with the radio disc jockeys, none of whom are doing it for the money. All of whom are doing it for the music and for the community. So it's really a wonderful, altruistic, loving, supportive community based around the music and the people who make it and the people who put it out there.
That's very true. I mean, everything you said is true about the way you get that general feeling from people when you just talk to them and meet them, that they're here for the love of music and the love of the art, and everybody's supportive. You know, I don't think there's any real competition, you know, between anybody here. It's all about, you know, what can I do to help you, you know, and make you a better musician, or help you find a gig, or help you find a way to get your music heard. You know, it's a very supportive.
Which is interesting, and you're absolutely right, but which is interesting because there are more people, more musicians looking for gigs than there are gigs to be had. So by definition, by nature, there's a competition, and yet that competitiveness doesn't really enter into the spirit of the conference and the people you meet, that you do want to help people along. And you know, my philosophy is ultimately that, you know what, if I get my act together and if I practice and if I write good songs and I'm prepared, that I'm going to get the gigs I'm going to get, and the people who are meant to see me are going to see me. And I think, like anything else, you just keep showing up in life, and the things that are supposed to happen do happen. And like I said, I said this at one of the workshops we did earlier, it's the definition of luck, which is preparation meets opportunity. So you things like this help you prepare, because you know what you're doing. And like you say, you compare to other people, go, maybe I need a little bit more lift in my choruses. Oh, how come people are compelled by his song and not by mine? Maybe I need to do a little bit more of that. So it's been a wonderful growing experience for me, in addition to just a lot of great, really deep friendships that every year when you see somebody, like we just met, and when I see you in Kansas City, we'll be that much closer.
We'll say, hey, how you doing, old friend?
You know? Before you know it, you get a hug. Before you know it, you really mean it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's great.
Well, tell
stuff.
Me about your new CD.
Well, it's, I mean, my music is, I wouldn't really call it folk music, but then again, I'm not quite sure what, I'll ask you this question. How do you define folk music?
Usually it's acoustic music is what I think of folk music. Usually it's got some sort of personal story to tell. That's basically my definition of it.
Well, in that case, I mean, that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm writing songs from my heart. I mean, even like a funny dog song I have called She Loves My Dog More Than Me, which is based on a true story about, you know, seems like you love a dog more than me. And then throw in some, you know,
we've all had that
poetic
experience,
license.
I think.
What's that?
We've all had that experience with
a
our
lot
significant
of people,
other, you
it's
know.
Amazing how many people relate to the song. So I do songs from my truth. Some are spiritual in nature. Love themes. Some are just life observations. And because I'm a pretty eclectic guy musically, I mean, I've been in the blues world a lot in R&B and rock, but also in folk. And Bonnie and I played a lot of folk festivals back in the day when it was just the two of us. So I've got to know people like John Prine and Jackson when it was just Jackson and David Lindley, and John was by himself, and Stevie Goodman. And so I and also coming from a little Pennsylvania town with John Philip Sousa marches, and growing up with classical music and loving Louis Armstrong, some New Orleans stuff, and then all the early stuff in New Orleans with the Coasters. And throwing, you know, Bob Dylan and the, you know, folk and the folk rock. So I'm coming from all these different places, and I think I finally found how to meld all these styles into the song by focusing on exactly what you said, that it's about the story, it's about the personal connection, it's about the melody, it's really about the vocal, and then I frame it with my acoustic guitar. So everything surrounds the vocal and acoustic guitar. Then I get to play bass with myself, which is always nice. And I find I'm really fortunate to know some great musicians, so I try to find the right drummer for the song, have him play the right thing, the right guitar player, keyboard. And I try and produce a song in a way that often it'll start acoustically and then build a certain extent, but you never lose, hopefully, and maybe you can tell me, but hopefully you never lose the spirit of the song. The vocals never obscured by the instruments, but they support it. And like with the James Taylor record, it's really all about James. It's about his vocal and his guitar. Everything else is supporting that, even though there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's supporting it. So it's eclectic in nature, but it's somewhat folk, somewhat Americana. I hate labels.
Tell everyone what the name of your CD is.
The name of the CD is called If Not Now, When. That's the title track. And I actually took 7 or 8 songs from my last CD from 5 years ago, and I re-sung them because I sing them better now. And I remixed them because I've had some perspective on them. In some cases, I added a couple of instruments, changed some drums, put a tuba on She Loves My Dog More Than Me, and 5 new songs. And sequenced it in a way that I think it works. And I think there were some songs that I felt never really quite got out to some of the folk disc jockeys. So the feedback I've gotten is really nice. It was was number 7 on the folk DJ list last month. So it got some airplay, which good thing, I guess, that the DJs like it.
And tell people where they can find your music.
Well, they can find it on my website. My name is Freebo, F-R-E-E-B-O. And my website is freebomusic.com. So they can find it there. They can go to CD Baby. My website will kind of tell you where to go. You can Facebook me, but I've got my 5,000 friends, so that gets a little difficult. But the email's real easy, freebo@freebomusic.com. I've got no qualms about, you know, personal issues. I'm not worried about being stalked, and if I am, I can always deal with it. So,
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and thanks for doing what you do. It's like I said in your workshop, that it's we make the best music we can, and it's certainly not going to get out through commercial radio corporate America. So it takes what I call vigilantism at its best, which is what we're all doing. We're doing what from our heart, and so what you guys are doing is equally as important as what we're doing, and it's a nice relationship, so thank you.
It works hand in hand, yep. Thank you so much, Freebo, for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Yeah. I'm Kathy Forstes, reporting from Far West Music Conference here in Oakland, California.